Hello and welcome to another episode of Full Court Finance here at Zacks. I'm your host, Ben Rains. And this week we are having a big World Cup preview. The World Cup starts on Thursday. But before we get into any of that, I want to say if you have any questions or episode suggestions, please feel free to shoot us an email over at podcast@zacks.com because we always appreciate any feedback or episode suggestions. So like I said, the 2018 FIFA World Cup in Russia is just a few days away. The first game between the host country and Saudi Arabia is scheduled to kick off at 11 a.m. Eastern this Thursday, the 14th on Fox. And then the tournament runs for almost a month. It ends July 15th. So basically exactly a month. In this episode, we're going to get into all the money, the sponsorships, the TV rights, the impact of Team USA not being a part of it. But first, I want to start with a little bit of a side note about soccer and then history, and we'll kind of go from there. So last week, if you guys or investors didn't hear this, Amazon made a big bid and jumped into the soccer world. And this, I can't really overstate this enough. I think long term, this is going to be a really big deal and something that more and more people need to pay attention to. Amazon bought the rights to the Premier League, which is based in England. It's pretty much the biggest soccer league in the world, or the most watched domestic soccer league in the world. So they have the live streaming rights, not just the live streaming rights. They have the exclusive rights to 20 games starting in the 2019-2020 season for a three-year period. They have 20 games over the holiday period in December, including the Boxing Day games, which is the day after Christmas. It's a national holiday in the UK. It's a huge, huge day. Think of it as like Thanksgiving Day football for the NFL. And they beat out Sky Sports and BT Sports, which are two huge UK-based networks. So I like to think of it as, imagine if a UK company came in and beat out ESPN or Turner for the rights to Christmas Day games for basketball, or if they did that for Thanksgiving Day games and they beat out CBS and Fox. Like, that's how you think of it, and it is pretty crazy going forward, and I think it's something that these streaming companies are going to get much more into is live sports, because it's the last thing that is holding a lot of these people, such as myself, to keep cable is live sports. So that'll be really fun to watch going forward. So now I want to get into, before we get into the business side of the World Cup, I want to give a little bit of a overview and a history, because I know a lot of Americans are not the biggest soccer fans. So I think this is really helpful, and it can be fun for the next month to know a little bit more about the World Cup and soccer and just all of that. And I think going forward, it's going to be even more relevant as soccer becomes bigger and bigger in the United States. So the first World Cup was held in 1930, and it was won by Uruguay. And then they've held the World Cup every 4 years since then, except they did not play it for, I think, two straight, or they didn't play it during World War II. So I don't know exactly how long it took a break, but they've played it every year since 1930. There's been 20 total World Cups. And then what was shocking to me, but not that shocking, so they've had 20 World Cups, but only 8 countries have ever won. Brazil, Italy, Germany, Uruguay, Argentina, England, France, and Spain are the only countries that have ever won the World Cup. Brazil has the most with 5 World Cup victories. Germany and Italy each have 4. Uruguay and Argentina each have 2. And then everyone else has 1. The defending champs are Germany. They won the 2014 World Cup in Brazil. They beat Lionel Messi and Argentina in the final 1-0. It was a late goal by Mario Götze. It was a very fun game. And then if for a random piece of trivia, if anyone is watching these games and wants to know the all-time leading scorer, it's 16 goals from a German named Miroslav Klose. I think his last World Cup was 2010, or it could have been 2014, but I'm not sure he played. So 16 is the most all-time goals, which sounds like not that many, but when you think about it, there's not that many games being played in the World Cup. But now let's move on a little bit. So the qualifying period for the World Cup is about 2 years. It'll end after this World Cup. Then there'll be the European Championships, which will be 2 years from now. And then right after the European Championships, there'll be 2 years of World Cup qualifying leading up to the 2022 World Cup. And 32 teams play. It's groups of four. So you play everyone in your group once. So every team who makes it is guaranteed to play at least three games. And then you go to the knockout stages where it's single game elimination all the way up to the final. And then for a little bit of a scope of how big the World Cup is, because I've mentioned on the show, and most people know, soccer is by far the biggest sport in the world. So the 2014 World Cup in Brazil reached 3.2 billion viewers. So almost half the world, if you think about it like that. And then for reference, the Super Bowl, about 100 million people watch it or so, which is really just pretty crazy. So this World Cup, pretty much all the heavy hitters made it except for Italy. And as I mentioned, the United States didn't make it. And how it's broken down makes sense. 14 of the teams are from Europe, 5 are from South America, 5 are from Africa, and then 5 are from Asia, the Middle East, and Australia is also in it. And then 3 are from North America, Central America, or the Caribbean. And that's what they call CONCACAF, and that's where the Americans would have been, but they could not even get a tie against Trinidad and Tobago, which is smaller than most big cities in America by far. So they didn't qualify. This was back in October of 2017. It was a huge deal then. I think people, including myself, have slowly gotten over it, but it's a big deal, and it's certainly going to hurt some of the American fan experience during this World Cup. And it was the first time they didn't qualify since 1986. I mean, it was really hard to imagine the Americans not qualifying for a World Cup, because we do have one of the easier roads to making the World Cup. So it's a really bad sign. We'll get into a little bit more of that later. I think maybe it'll end up just being a little bit of a kick in the butt, and we'll get some fresh blood, and down the line, it'll end up being a good thing. But before we get into that, there's a lot more stuff. And I want to quickly explain the difference, because when I talk about soccer to some people, I don't think everyone necessarily understands. So the World Cup is much different than, say, Manchester United, or when you hear about that. So the World Cup is the national teams. It's like the Olympics, where the players who play in the NBA then play for Team USA in the Olympics. It's the same concept. So you have domestic leagues like the English Premier League, La Liga in Spain, the Bundesliga in Germany. Those are all where players are getting paid a bunch of money to play during their team club season. And then the World Cup and all these other tournaments are for your country. And then there is also the Champions League and the Europa League, which are in-season tournaments with club teams. So it's kind of complicated, but it's also very simple at the same time. So that was just a little aside to give some frame of reference for what this summer means, because it is pretty much the biggest sporting event in the world, second to maybe the European Championships, which are also held every 4 years in the 2 years in between, or in the off years of the World Cup. But now I want to get into the money and the star power and all of that. So FIFA breaks down their sponsors into official partners, World Cup sponsors, or regional sponsors. And FIFA is, for people who don't know, it's the governing body of international soccer. They earn, and they're widely considered really corrupt, which we'll get into a little bit later as well. And it just search FIFA corruption and read an article. It's really fun stuff. They earn about 90% of their revenue from broadcasting and sponsorships and marketing deals. FIFA said it sold $1.7 billion worth of broadcasting rights for the 2018 and 2022 World Cups just in the Middle East and Asia. And that's up 90% from the last World Cup cycle. So almost $2 billion just for a smaller set of broadcasting rights. And it's unclear exactly how much these World Cup partners and sponsors are paying. But in the 2014 World Cup alone, FIFA reportedly made $1.6 billion just from sponsors for that World Cup. And these FIFA partners either pay between $25 or $50 million annually, while the World Cup sponsors pay between $10 and $25 million. So it's a big deal, and the pitch is really simple from FIFA. They're just saying, we're the biggest sport in the world. We host the biggest sporting events in the world, and we reach about 3 billion people across 200 countries. That's the pitch. And it is simple. I mean, you're going to get the most reach possible by sponsoring or paying $50 million, which for these big companies, that's nothing at all. So it really makes a lot of sense that these do it. So for this World Cup cycle, which is the next two World Cups, there are 7 official FIFA partners. That is Adidas, Coca-Cola, Visa, and then you have Hyundai/Kia, and then a Chinese conglomerate called Wanda, and then a Russian giant company called Gazprom, and then Qatar Airways. So those are the 7 big players that are official FIFA partners. And then this year's World Cup, an official sponsor is Budweiser. So that's Anheuser-Busch InBev. Budweiser is the official beer of the World Cup. And then you have McDonald's as an official World Cup partner. And then some other companies probably no one's heard of, so I won't even mention it at all. In Coca-Cola, as I said, they're an official partner. They've been a partner with FIFA since 1974, so a really long time, before soccer really started to get popular in America at all. But once again, these companies who are sponsoring it are thinking globally. The American audience is kind of secondary to them because the American market is not necessarily a growth market for any of these companies. So they don't care about Budweiser doesn't care about reaching an American audience. They care about reaching these international audiences. And what is really interesting, though, is so Coke signed, they re-signed a 16-year deal with FIFA in 2005. But that's before they even know where these World Cups are going to be hosted. So that shows you, and it's interesting because it's Russia and then Qatar, which that gets into the corruption of, it's like 120 degrees in the summer in Qatar, and there's talk that they don't know how they're going to host it in 120 degree weather in the middle of the summer. But we'll get to that maybe a little bit later. But it just shows you that these companies, it's just, we have to be a part of this no matter what. Visa, they beat out MasterCard about a decade ago, took over from them as an official partner. And Adidas has been the official ball and sponsor of FIFA since the early 70s, and they re-signed a deal to do that through 2030. So it seems like they're going to be there perpetually, and it makes sense because Adidas is a German-based company. Soccer is their lifeblood. They want to be a part of that. And now I want to transition into what the American audience is going to get a little bit, in where we're going to experience the World Cup this year, because it's going to look a lot differently and sound a lot different than it has over the past 20 years or so. So this World Cup cycle, Fox outbid ESPN. So they have the English language rights in the United States. And Telemundo has the Spanish language rights in the United States. So combined, they spent about $1 billion for the rights to broadcast this World Cup and the next World Cup. And they did this back in 2011. So it's been a big deal ever since then. And Fox has been really preparing for this because it's a big chance and they don't want to mess it up. So Fox is paying about $400 million for these two World Cups. And Telemundo, which is owned by NBC Universal, is paying $600 million for these two World Cup cycles. So breaking it down per game, Fox is paying about a little over $3 million per game for the next two World Cups, which really isn't that crazy when you're Fox and you have a lot of money and this is just something you want on your network long term. And then Telemundo is almost paying 5 $4.7 million for the individual games over the next two World Cup cycles. And then what's also crazy is that a Spanish language radio station in the United States paid $100 million for these rights. I don't know. I guess I'm not a big terrestrial radio listener, so I just think it's crazy that a radio station is paying $100 million for the rights to broadcast the World Cup. But what's also interesting is how much the rights have gone up, and this is something I've talked about a bunch on this show, is how live rights are all that matters for sports, because Fox paid four times as much as ESPN and Univision paid combined for their last deal, which is crazy. But now I want to get into a little bit more of the actual coverage and what it's going to look like on Fox. And it's going to be a big deal, because Fox is really is going all out with this, and it's going to look a lot different than ESPN's coverage. So they're going to air 38 out of the 64 games on the actual Fox main channel. And the rest of the games will be on FS1, which is Fox Sports 1. And according to Fox, and it makes sense, I didn't confirm this, but according to Fox, the broadcast, so on actual Fox, that's going to be more games broadcast on network television than were aired in the last four World Cup cycles combined in the United States. Because when ESPN had it, they were pretty much showing all of the games only on ESPN or ESPN2. I believe the last World Cup final was on ABC, but most of the games were on cable. So that's a really big deal. And you can also watch all of the games live streamed on Fox Sports Go or Fox Soccer Match Pass, which I'm not exactly sure what that is, but I'm assuming it's a soccer-specific Fox app. And then you can also, anywhere you can pay to have Fox, so that's YouTube TV, Hulu, you can watch these games as well. And then a big deal, you'll hear a lot of people talking about that the last World Cup was good for ESPN because the times worked better. They were on at better times. This World Cup, for the group stages, most of the games will start in America between 6 a.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. Eastern. So that's right during working hours. It's really hard for a lot of people to watch these games, but it also shows you that people are going to watch them no matter what, and that's how important it is. You're going to see a lot of people coming into work a little late maybe, or leaving a little early to watch these games. But just so you know, the final is on a Sunday at 11 a.m., so that's pretty accessible time to watch this. And what's crazy is that Fox, since the United States didn't make it, they've lowered what they were going to do. They're not going as over the top, since they think the interest in America is going to be down a little bit. But they have three different studio shows coming on every day: World Cup Live, World Cup Today, and World Cup Tonight. And they have a studio in Red Square in Moscow. And they originally planned to send 450 Fox employees to Russia. Now they're sending about 200, and they're only sending two of their broadcast teams. So everyone else is going to be calling the games from Fox's studios back in the States, which is not uncommon. ESPN did that for most of their World Cups. They only sent a couple crews down to Brazil for the last World Cup cycle. But this is a statement from Fox, and I think it kind of illuminates what they think of the World Cup. The World Cup is not only the summer's biggest sporting event, but it's Fox's largest production ever, Fox Sports' largest production ever in their 24-year history. So a lot's riding on this, and if it doesn't go well, FIFA's under more pressure to change it, but FIFA's not going to change it because they already paid them all this money. But one thing that I am kind of disappointed about, and it's something that a lot of American soccer fans are going to have to slowly get used to as the sport grows in America, is that most of the announcers for Fox's coverage are going to be Americans themselves. So you're not going to hear the famous British accents, the fun British accents that ESPN's coverage was known for. So that's going to be a little disappointing for a lot of people. It might sound It might sound less prestigious, a little less fun, but going forward, I think it's something, like I said, that American audiences are just going to have to accept, because if we want the sport to grow in America, it has to be that Americans are allowed to talk about it with some sense of we have the right to talk about this because we have played. So the main broadcast team, the color commentator, is Stu Holden, who played for Team USA men's team and also played over in the Premier League in England, but his career was cut short by some really brutal knee injuries, I think in like 3 seasons in a row. So that's a bummer for him. But I want to talk a little bit quickly before we move on about ESPN, because ESPN's World Cup coverage really helped build the sport's popularity here in the States. So the United States itself hosted the 1994 World Cup, and then ESPN got the rights for that World Cup and then had them ever since. So they had it 6 times in a row from 94 to 2004. Their coverage last year, or last time around in 2014, averaged about 4.6 million viewers a game, which is really pretty solid. But the problem is, and Fox's problem is going to be, that games not featuring the United States averaged about 3.9 million, in that the 4 games that the United States played, Ghana, Portugal, and Germany, and then they made it to the knockout stage, almost beat Belgium, don't want to get into that. Those accounted for 20% of the total viewership over that month-long tournament. So 4 games accounted for 20% of the viewership, 4 games the United States played in. The United States is not in the tournament this year, and that's why people are a little worried that Fox's coverage is going to not be as well-received or watched as much, which makes sense. But Fox, and this is Fox saying it because what else are they going to say? Fox's statement was, while the U.S. was eliminated, the biggest stars in the world, from Lionel Messi to Cristiano Ronaldo, stamped their tickets to Russia on that same day. The United States didn't qualify, and they have teams from Mexico to England that have massive fan bases here in the United States. So, and it seems clear that most soccer fans, even in the United States, probably don't care as much about the United States. There are so many people from all over the world that live in the United States that have this connection to their home country, that Fox's coverage is not going to be something where no one watches it. And even if you're an American soccer fan, if you're a hardcore American soccer fan, and even if you love Team USA, I bet you're just as likely to watch this World Cup. The only people that are losing are the casual, I watch soccer every 4 years, 3 times a year. My producer Danny's nodding his head. That's me. So those are the people that are going to lose, which is a little bit of a bummer, but we'll see how that goes. A research group, Pivotal Research Group, said that they expect it to impact Fox negatively by about $20 million, which is negligible for Fox. I mean, that really means nothing to them at all. I think having the World Cup means way more than not making $20 million extra dollars you could have made if the United States was in it. But we'll move on from Fox, because I could talk about that for a really long time. Now I want to get to something that I think might be more accessible and at least more fun for a lot of people, and that is the star power that if you watch any of these games, you will see on display, and that it's all the commercials you will see leading up to it and during the World Cup, is the huge international stars that might not be as famous in the United States, but they are hugely popular around the world. And then also the jersey companies and the sportswear companies that are involved in the World Cup is massively important for them. So before I get into the stars, I want to talk a little bit about the kit makers, which is what they call soccer jerseys. They're the uniforms in Europe. So Adidas leads the charge this summer. They're sponsoring 12 of the 32 teams. Nike has 10, and then Puma has 4. New Balance has 2, and then I think that leaves maybe 4 teams in their companies you probably haven't heard of. Notably left off, though, Under Armour. No teams at all in the World Cup. I've mentioned this before. Under Armour, I think, I don't know what they're doing. That the fact that they can't muster up whatever relatively small amount of money it would be to at least sponsor one team in the World Cup, just to have their logo out there in front of billions of people across 200 countries, seems a little strange to me, but I don't want to get too sidetracked with my Under Armour rant there. So, in a little, you'll also probably read, and if you've read at all leading up to the World Cup, the jerseys are a big deal. They try to, the companies try to make them look a little different every World Cup cycle, even though they stay almost the same in the sense that most of the big teams aren't changing their look because they want it to seem historic and in line with what they've looked like since, in some cases, 1930. But this year, the big talk is Nigeria. Their jersey made by Nike sold out in like 5 minutes on the internet. It's like this throwback jersey that's really colorful, and just look it up. Do yourself a favor. And now they're selling for crazy amounts of money on the secondary market. But personally, so I've looked this up on five different websites. They rank all 32 teams and the coolness of their jersey. And I don't think I read one that didn't have Nigeria as the number one jersey. But personally, I really like Spain's jersey, Germany's jersey, and France. Their jersey is very simple. I like those. So I'm going to be a little contrarian there. And then some of the teams likely to win: Brazil, sponsored by Nike. Germany, obviously Adidas. Spain, Adidas. France, Nike. Argentina, Adidas. So the big top teams are sponsored by the two biggest sportswear companies in the world. And that makes sense. And now I want to go on to the stars. And this is really what, I mean, aside from the passion of the individual countries and their fan bases, if you don't have any skin in the game, you are most likely then rooting for a star or wanting to see these big famous guys score some awesome goals in the World Cup. So three of the most famous players in the world are Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi, and Neymar. He goes by just Neymar. I forget his actual first name, but he goes by just one name. A lot of the Brazilian guys go by just one name. So Cristiano plays for Portugal, Lionel Messi plays for Argentina, and Neymar, as I said, plays for Brazil. And they are, as I've now said a million times, they are some of the most famous people in the world. ESPN's World Fame 100 list, which names the 100 most famous athletes in the world, they were number one, Cristiano Ronaldo, number three, Lionel Messi, and number four was Neymar. And then they also make a lot of money. And these numbers might shock people or make them depressed or think, hey, maybe I'll make my kid become a famous soccer player. So the Forbes list of biggest money-making athletes for 2018, or maybe it's actually 2017, but the last year it just came out. So number one was Floyd Money Mayweather. He made, I think, $250 million last year, most of it from his Conor McGregor fight. But then you had Lionel Messi at number two. He made $111 million last year, which is pretty crazy. He was number three. He made $108 million, and Neymar was number five, and he made $90 million from soccer. And a lot of this is coming from sponsorships, but also in Europe, they have, unlike American professional sports, there's no real salary cap structure. So Messi made, from FC Barcelona where he plays, his salary last year was reportedly $84 million. Yeah, which is absolutely insane. But then for just a little sense of how famous these people really are, the three of them, so Messi had 92.7 million followers on Instagram. I think that's 15th most famous in the world. Cristiano was at 128.3 million followers on Instagram. That's number two in the world behind Selena Gomez. So in terms of the most famous people, Cristiano Ronaldo is up there among them. And Neymar was number 10 in the world in terms of Instagram following. So these three guys are names you're going to hear a lot. You're going to see them in a lot of ads. They're going to be, Neymar and Cristiano Ronaldo are going to be in the Beats by Dre ads. You're sure to see everywhere, either on Instagram or on television. They're owned by Apple now. So those are going to be huge. But I want to also mention a few other stars, if you're watching it all, or if you can talk about it at a cocktail party, impress your friends with some names that might not be known to that many people in the United States, aside from more hardcore soccer fans. And one big one is going to be Mohamed Salah. He plays for Egypt, and he helped lead Liverpool to the Champions League final a couple weeks ago, and he was second leading goal scorer in all of Europe. He scored 44 goals in 52 games this season, tied with Cristiano Ronaldo and right behind Messi at 45 goals. Some other big names are Kevin De Bruyne. He plays for Belgium, a midfield player who also plays for Manchester City. You'll hear Paul Pogba's name a lot. He plays for France as well as Manchester United. And then Antoine Griezmann, who plays for Atletico Madrid, who also plays for France. And then Harry Kane is going to be a big name if you're at all an England fan. He's the captain of England. He's their young star. He's 24, and he's England's hope because they notoriously underperform in the World Cup in the nation that brought the world soccer. So that matters a lot. And then, yeah, those are some of the other names you're going to hear a lot. And then as we start to close this episode, I wanted to talk a little bit about some high-techy things people are trying out during this World Cup cycle. So BBC plans to have all of their matches available live in virtual reality through a free VR app. And then all the games are going to be also live in ultra HD 4K. So that's really interesting. And that's one of the only big techie things I wanted to get into, because once again, you could talk about this topic at length because the World Cup is something where people just try to promote what they're doing. So you have companies like IBM getting involved with the World Cup, just sort of wanting to put their name out there. You might see something about IBM Watson powering this thing that Fox is promoting, that lets you watch highlights that you curate yourself, highlights of all the World Cups dating back to 1958. So that might be actually fun to give it a try. But I want to close with a little bit of Vegas odds for any newly legalized sports bettors out there. The odds on favorite to win, there's a couple different sites where you might get this order might be a little different in some places. But the odds on favorite to win are Brazil is the favorite, Germany's next, Spain, France, Argentina. In the least likely team to win is Saudi Arabia. And they're also playing in the first game, like I said, versus Russia. And then another thing a lot of people might bet on is the Golden Boot winner, which would be the leading scorer of the tournament. The odds on favorite there are Lionel Messi at number one, Antoine Griezmann of France at number two, Neymar of Brazil at number four, and then Cristiano Ronaldo of Portugal at number five, or actually maybe number four there. And then I want to close, as I've said now maybe a couple times, with the United States and what it means that they're not in the World Cup, because for as much as a lot of people will be disappointed, I think long-term it might be a good thing that over the last couple weeks and even going forward, the United States team has been playing a lot of international games that they would have been playing leading up to the World Cup anyways. And now the old guard is gone. As soon as they failed to qualify in October, all of the guys who were on their last run with the United States, some of the big names, Clint Dempsey, Michael Bradley, their days with the national team are over. The United States is now playing a lot of guys who are 17, 18, 19 years old. And that is what going forward the United States is going to need to do, because for forever it's been soccer is a sport of the future. but people have not seen the results in not qualifying for this World Cup is going to be hopefully a huge wake-up call for the United States men's national team. And going forward, I think it'll end up producing a better outcome, in that at the 2022 World Cup, we'll be there, and I think we'll be maybe better than we have been in a while, with just a young group of guys who have grown up with so many stars in America to look at for inspiration. And just some numbers to throw out there real quick that I've mentioned a couple times on the show before, is for all the people who say that soccer is pretty irrelevant in the United States, a Gallup poll that's conducted every year, and it has been for, I think, 70 years, soccer reached its highest point this last year. 7% of Americans said their favorite sport to watch was soccer, which is just right behind baseball at 9%. So it's the highest soccer's ever been and the lowest baseball's ever been. So the only two sports ahead of that are the NFL and the NBA. So going forward, expect that number to grow even more. And then for a little tidbit, as the last thing I'll mention, is that now there's talks that the United States, Mexico, and Canada, which is funny because we have all of this NAFTA fiasco going on right now, they might make a joint bid to get the 2026 World Cup, which would then be huge for the United States because they have not had it in a long time. So we'll see how that goes. But as I mentioned, FIFA is a pretty corrupt organization, as you can see that Russia and Qatar got back-to-back World Cups when there was probably more reasonable places to host the event. But it'll be really fun to watch how Fox's coverage is and how the American audience receives a World Cup without the United States national team for the first time in a really long time. But I encourage even our non-soccer listeners or people who say they don't like soccer, just give a game a try. If it's on a weekend, it's on at 11 a.m., go to a bar, have a beer. It'll be a really fun atmosphere, and I really just encourage anyone to just give it a try, because I do think, especially as football declines, soccer is the most popular sport in the world by far. Nothing's close to it. In America, likely one day, it will look more similar to the rest of the world in terms of soccer's importance. So that does it for another episode of Full Court Finance. Until next time, I'm your host, Ben Raines. And remember, if you have any questions, please feel free to shoot us an email over at podcast@zacks.com.